It's the motherfucking Millennial Mina podcast.
What's up, y'all? Welcome back to the Millennial Miha podcast. I'm Millennial Miha, and this is the 2019 recap. This is going to be the year in review. I want to start doing this on the podcast because I think it's important to kind of take inventory of your life and where it is now in comparison to where it was at the beginning of the year. And now, for the first time in my life, I feel like I'm awake to that stuff. And so I want to make this kind of like a ritual, and I hope that you make it a ritual in your own life as well. So let's recap 2019. The trauma marathon. No, it's like, it's less about the trauma and more about how I survived it, because I'm from where we know how to turn rain into rainbows, and I know y'all can relate to that. So I also just want to give like the majorest, biggest, most loudest shout out to every single person who has been out there supporting me by buying my merch, buying my books, anybody who's booked me for a show, anybody who sent me an encouraging word. Y'all some real ones for that, because, you know, I felt really lonely over this past year, but somehow I knew I wasn't alone, and y'all would just kind of help me remember that. And I just want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. Thank you for making it a success. Thank you for just giving me something to, you know, want to keep on continuing to create for. I appreciate y'all, and let's get right into it. We need to talk about Thanksgiving for a little while, because Thanksgiving did not work out the way that we thought it was, huh, babe? We had a plan about like what we were gonna do, and we were gonna go to my sister's house, but that just didn't work out. And so my mom ended up making like a really impromptu chicken dinner here. Yeah. And she, like, this is what she used to like, get stuffed chicken breast, and then she would stuff it with stuffing and just put it like that. It's good. She bakes it. And so I always like grew up being like, that's one of my favorite meals. And she would get some mashed potatoes and some corn and some gravy. Ooh, and that sounds really so good. I was like, she should just make that. So she made that, and it was bomb as fuck, as usual, because my mom could cook. And so we just had that, and then we just got some wine, and we watched The Irishman. Ooh. It was actually just, like, a really chill Thanksgiving, huh, babe?
Yeah. It's good.
So like, he's the yeah man.
Yeah. You can make a crisp yeah soundbite. That's cool. It's like,
so it, like, wasn't what we expected, but it was, like, really, like, I really liked it. And then Vanessa Marimarco.
Somebody's at the door, Mom. Can you get it?
Shout out to Vera. He named her that long ass time ago. He would always give people like different little nicknames, and he would always say her name Vanessa Marimarco, because that was her Instagram name. Anyways, so shout out my bestie Vanessa. She was my first ever college roommate, and we used to live in Highland Park. Shout out Mesa Street. My sister, she's a cop, and she was like, oh my God, that street has the highest crime rate in the whole Highland Park, or something like that. I was like, oh my God, how did she know? She probably looked it up.
Yeah.
But, so yeah, is she a sheriff? She's a detective.
Your sister?
She's a sergeant. Oh, that's okay. What she is. Your sister? I keep forgetting. Yeah, my sister Teresa from the LAPD. What? And we're like literally opposites attract. Like, we're so opposite, but our eyebrows are similar.
That's how you know your sisters.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we just had like a cool Thanksgiving that was like not a big deal. Like, yeah, it was like everybody was just chill.
So we can start with, so this is the 2019.
Okay, so I have to think about what is the purpose of this podcast? Like, what do I want the purpose of it to be? I wanted to inform people of where I'm, what my intention is with my platform, because I think many people have like asked me since we started it, like, so what is your podcast about? And I'll be like, it's about me.
Yeah.
So I wanted to inform people of like what this podcast is, but I think I have to like maybe think a little harder about what is it supposed to do. And the only answer I can come up with for that is it's supposed to heal me, and in the presence of others. And hopefully that helps heal some people. So I think that's what I really want it to be about. So I guess it's a healing podcast. Millennial Mija, the healing podcast. Yeah, we're going to do some ASMR because I'm going to eat these cookies all up in the speaker. And yeah, I just, like, I'm looking over at my little altar and it's kind of starting to make sense of what the purpose of this is. It's the same purpose. I guess this is just what I'm using to try to heal myself. So maybe we can heal together, you know?
Do you want to start with the timeline of when you decided healing was a priority?
Oh, I have not been wanting to talk about this. This is like another one of those exercises in doing things that are scary on purpose, because you know you'll feel so much better after that.
Your greatness or confidence lies just outside your comfort zone.
Yes, that's the exact idea. Like, my whole life I have always tried to, like, not feel any pain, or like, because I was afraid that I was too weak to feel it, like, to let myself feel it. But what I figured out is what makes you strong is letting yourself feel it. And then being like, oh, I can handle that. Like, I didn't die. And, but that's what anxiety is like, being afraid, like, rightfully so, because you're like, well, you're still stuck in survival mode. So you're listening to your fight or flight response. Like, this is hard, run. You know, but just not really knowing that your healing is just right after you let yourself feel those things and then experience the relief of being like, oh, that sucked a lot, but I didn't die. And then being willing to do that again, if that makes any sense. So I guess a little timeline, or the Millennial Mija 2019 recap. I guess the story of this podcast kind of starts in February when so my birthday is January 20th. I'm a Capricorn with the Aries moon and sort of stars in the galaxy of Orion. I don't know. Dion made me get that CoStar app. So I'm barely starting to, like, look at it and being like, sometimes it'll put up little alerts like, fear is the enemy of greatness. And I'm like, oh my God, it is. Thank you for reminding me of that. So I just really like that, because it'll always come at like a zodiac friendly moment. So I guess it's like happens to just translate there where I need to hear it. It
starts to call you out on things like, what are you hiding, or things like that. Like, it'll like be really uplifting one day and then be like, don't drag me today, I don't need it.
For sure. No, I have had that moment where I was like, oh bitch, swipe up,
get back. Like, excuse me, bye.
Back to being a bitch.
Excuse me, I need to pretend I didn't see that. We should do a whole episode on the sun, moon, and rising sign. We should do that, because that's fun.
Oh my God, okay. We have a astrologer fight on our astrology fight. Because you know how they be saying, or file, like they like that word, and then that's how I like remember, like, oh, that must mean that they really like that thing. So I just gotta figure out what that thing is.
Because bibliophile is someone who loves books,
and a cinephile is someone who loves movies. That's like Chris. That's you, babe.
It's cool.
Yeah.
You're a cinephile. Oh, we're all, by the way, we're sitting all three in my room on a Monday afternoon. It's 6:50, and we are lighting some sage, and she brought a little treat, of THC.
I'm lighting the sage, not the joint.
Yeah. Hey, do what you gotta do.
I just noticed it went out, and I felt bad.
I'm a 2019 hippie.
Yeah. Me too.
Damn, I really am living off the grid. I quit my job, cashed out my retirement, and I said, I'm going to go start a business and a podcast. And people are looking at me like, oh, girl, you're going to be homeless tomorrow.
We have Fred. Fred and a podcast, so.
So okay. Fred is like a huge part of my, have I started this yet?
We started to, and then we started talking about astrology, so I'm sorry.
Okay, well, I guess I have kind of told the story. So about February, I had keep asking, like, my supervisors for a raise, like, a whole year of asking, even though, like, by the city's own law, like, their own policy, I was supposed to be getting a 5% raise increase every evaluation. So once I did a little bit of digging, it turned out that I hadn't even had an evaluation since 2017. Like, I've had them, thinking I had them, but I hadn't had one turned in since 2017.
So, like, you did what you were supposed to do.
But they didn't do their part, which is why I hadn't been receiving the... I hadn't gotten a step increase since 2017. And they moved me from working at the teen center to working at a Victory Park running the Adaptive and Inclusive Recreation Program for adults with disabilities.
Oh, wow.
And so, I'm running that program, yeah. But I'm a part-time employee, 20 hours a week. And I was wondering why I was really stressed out of trying to get the job done.
Yeah.
Because that's a 40-hour position.
Yeah.
Like, it's running an entire program.
You should have been getting paid for 40 hours.
I should have been getting paid for 40 hours and been able... Because that was my thing. It wasn't as... And that's what's sad is I wasn't even thinking about how low I was getting paid.
Yeah.
More than anything, I was thinking about... the participants. I was like, yeah. I'm giving you a shitty program because it's the bare minimum that I can do. I can't run the program properly without more hours, and that with more hours comes more pay.
Yeah.
But that's the part that was leading me to my breakdown, was the, like, this moral thing. Like, yeah. I felt like I was doing something wrong because I was like looking at it from a perspective of, well, how important are these people? Like, how important is this service that they rely on weekly to come to and have that as a place to have recreation? Like, and that was a real question that I had to, like, morally ask myself. But the problem was is that I kept asking myself, why am I having a breakdown? Why am I... Who they need to ask is, ask the city of Pasadena. Ask them why it was necessary to deny me a raise for a year. Because for so long, I was like, why can't I handle this? And the reason why it was because it's not meant to be handled by one part-time 20-hour-a-week employee. And so I was, like, getting mentally stressed, but also, like, emotionally drained because I was working two jobs and I was having to, like, pass up opportunities to do things that I felt were, like, beneficial to my poetry career. Like, I was having to pass down shows, or, like, I went to the BSA thing. My calendar didn't ring, or I didn't put it in correctly, or something happened, and I wasn't able to make it to there on time. So I was like 2 hours late, and they still let me film. And by the grace of God, I just got the opportunity to do that, and they didn't cancel on me. And the reason why I was late was because I went to the wrong address, because I was looking at the call sheet, and, like, a real Hollywood time call sheet, and it said, I looked at the first address that was there. Turns out that's the drop-off location for the equipment,
not
the location of the set. So I went to the drop-off location for the freaking equipment. And you can imagine how, like, just for me, that just really was really difficult for me to handle, because that was just another example of how I had an oversight on something. How if I had just taken a little bit more time to pay attention to it, because of ADHD, like, everything I do is, like, it feels like I'm 20 minutes late.
Like, just always playing catch-up.
Yeah, in every, even metaphorically and, like, emotionally, and, like, it just always feels like I'm late. Like, I always feel like I'm rushing to get to wherever I get to, and then I, like, anxiety myself through it. Yeah. Like,
like, I got this, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, just breathing your way through it and hoping for the best.
And so that kind of, you know, that having to go through that job was just really, it was really stressful and hard. And
because it sounded like they weren't just not only denying you a raise, but not giving you the budget your program needed.
Not just the budget. Yeah. So there was the budget, which was, I was, like, trying to take control of. But the thing about working with adults with disabilities is that when you're planning. So, like, the difference of running the program with the teen center was, like, I had gotten to think about what I would want to do, or where I would want to go, or, like, what would be fun, which is a hell of a lot easier than having to ask yourself, okay, not what would just be fun, but what would also be autism friendly, Down syndrome friendly, wheelchair friendly, so you have to think, like, really specifically. And that's the reason why my background working in for the school district in special ed department as an aide, a one-on-one aid to people with disabilities, so for, like, so many years.
Yeah.
And so that gave me the insight that I needed to be able to run this program well, but I just didn't have the actual time to do it, because in the morning I was still working at La Cañada as a an instructional aid, like a one-on-one, and then I would have the other half of the day to work there. So it was just like really difficult because I wanted to do a good job, but I was fucking stressed.
Yeah. And so I'm like stretched too thin too. Like you couldn't dedicate enough time to either place.
Yeah. And I think what I really truly needed was work accommodations for my ADHD, which are available through the ADA.
You weren't getting the support or the work accommodations.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what I think it was. I think that what I needed was accommodations, but I didn't know really how to ask for that. I mean, I had gotten them in college, but it's, how would you describe working for the city? Like, it's just like, it's kind of almost like being, it's just like an extension of growing up there. It's all the same kind of people. Like, it's that you would think like certain people are like so super educated that that changes them. It doesn't. It fucking doesn't. People are petty if they're educated or not. Like, people are who they are, and that really is like an inherent thing that, and also like a lot of people from the city of Pasadena work for the city of Pasadena, so it was just like it wasn't an environment where I felt comfortable raising my hand and be like, "Hi guys, I have a disability, can somebody help me write an email?" Like,
so you were still like, "Oh, these people are gonna
judge me." Hell yeah.
This is the same, like that whole you never really leave high school idea.
Yeah,
where it's the same personalities over and over again.
Girl, yes, exactly. That's exactly what I mean.
Oof.
So I was just like, I didn't really feel comfortable asking for that. And so I think there's a question in here that has to do with ADHD, more avoidance behavior.
All right. So.
And then in March, so I had a breakdown in February at work. And when I say breakdown, what I did was I tried to request my meeting with my department head for human services and recreation. I'm not gonna name no names because you could Google that shit.
It's public information anyway. But
all I'm saying is, whatever, this is my story. You know that quote that they say that
there's like,
if you didn't want people to write about you, then you should have treated them better. Well, make a right there and then say, well,
here's
that's to you.
Lesson one.
Let me show you how I feel. So I was so dumb. Like, I posted that meme the other day that was like the little Arthur's little sister. She's sitting there like with her in her desk with like two pads of paper, like kind of, it's like me listing all the ways I add value to this place so that I can get a raise. And that was dead ass, that was me, like 1000%. I really thought the more if I build my case, like, I really thought that that was going to somehow...
I just have to explain it better.
Yes. Like, if I just told them what I'm doing, I can appeal to reason and logic, and I will be awarded the raise that I should have been given in 2017. Yeah. Like, the fact that I even was so delusional that I thought I had to beg for it and make a fucking pony show or whatever I don't know what that means, but like if I thought that I had to make a show just to receive something that was owed to me is psychotic. I'm sorry, that's fucking psychotic.
And they kept the information from you too.
Yeah. And these bitches, like, ooh, Lord have mercy, they really had me fucked up.
Well, you did say breakdown at work. That's not a little, like,
no, I banged my head against the steering wheel. I was never going to say that. Oh, okay, I just said it.
Well, we can edit it out if you want.
You know what? No, I guess it's relevant because that's what this is about. It's about just saying the truth, I guess. And then it makes you feel better. So, yeah, that's what happened. I actually did that, and that's embarrassing, and, like, I know that confirms a freaking weirdo, but...
But you were cut. It sounded like you were, like...
No, so what happened was that, like, made these packets of information, spreadsheets, and, like, my job description and all the things I had done thus far. And because I had gone through another supervisor, because my supervisor had gotten switched 4 times in 1 year. So I had had 4 different supervisors. So that was not conducive to me growing in the position because I never had anybody say, like, hey, is this the way you do it? Cause other than the first person who was my supervisor. So then after that, I was just like, I hope this is how I do it.
Yeah.
And, like, once in a while, I would ask her. But so it was just very upsetting, like, how I had to think that I had to do all of that. But... So I finally requested this meeting from the last supervisor that I had. Yeah. And they told me to basically, like, don't walk in there and be demanding shit and blah, blah, blah. This is how this person works, the supervisor, the, like, main head. She's like, this is, you have to go their way or they won't like mess with you. So I'm like, okay, so tell me how to do it. They're like, put together, you know, a little paper saying whatever. I had to put together a packet. And so
not just one page.
Yeah, no. Several. Like a reason why I wanted a reclassification or a more hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I did that. And then my meeting request was denied. Like straight from her. Like, you know how it says whoever
yeah.
declined your request for a meeting.
The person you requested to see, they declined.
Yeah. Like, so I don't know why that just set me off, because I was ready for the meeting to have, like, I was ready for it. Like, I was, because I had gone, like, I had fought so hard, and I did it their way. I did exactly, I did what they said to do.
Yeah.
And
you did everything you were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And still.
Just for that. And then that was, like, my breaking point.
Yeah.
And then I just, like, couldn't go to work, and I just sent them an email, like, I'm in the parking lot, I can't get out of the car. And I was, like, at such a low point in my life. Like, just so, like, that was, I was, like, what have I spent the last however many years trying to build?
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, confirmation that they didn't give no type of fuck about me. And that was hard. Because then I felt like, what else could I have been doing? Like, if I would have just taken a chance on myself and earlier tried to go and tour more or whatever, but instead I was saying no because I had to work.
And work didn't even care that you were doing this.
That
you were doing your job really well.
Yeah. And, Or it also meant that they cared so little about the pioneer participants, the adults with disabilities, and my friends at that point, that they didn't care that their whole program was being run in a subpar way, because the person who was running it was only one person and didn't have enough hours in the day to get the things done that needed to be done.
And that was part of your whole proposal that you were going to present, that they didn't give you the chance to.
Yeah. And so that was just really fucked up. So,
set you off.
So that set me off. And then, I got a month stress leave, and then, I had to use my vacation time because part-time doesn't get like whatever. Yeah. I don't know. So, I was on it for a month, and like they had no contact with me. They didn't give a fuck about me other than a PR or a HR call. And it wasn't even from somebody who was like my actual supervisor or anybody to like be like, hey, you okay?
Yeah, it was.
You alive? Like, no type of, like, personal regard at all, which I don't give a fuck what anybody says about, like, decorum or, like, professionalism.
Yeah.
Like, I don't give a fuck what they say about that. That's just, like, a human courtesy. Like, an email. Like, hey, so we heard you had, like, a mental breakdown.
Like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Or anything but
Yeah, but I know the city probably tells them, like, no contact whatsoever. And that's just, like, so trash. Like, okay, so, yeah. But they'll send get well sick cards when people have a flu, or get well home, get well soon.
Take care then. Well,
yeah, I don't know.
It's not the same.
But so then that happened, and I decided that I didn't want to go back. And so then in March, Molly's father passed away, and that was like a whole. Oh my God! This is like a fucking marathon of trauma. Trauma marathon. That's what you should title it. 2019, a trauma marathon.
And how you survived.
And how I survived. I'm a survivor. So then I was like, yeah, triggered central. 2019, triggered central trauma marathon. So I basically got home to pick up Molly to take her to dance class, and I got there a little late, like I always do, and I ran in there, and on this corner of my eye, I seen, like, it looks like somebody had, like, a jackhammer, because there's, like, always construction workers there, so there's always, like, they're always improving the house, and so for a second, I just thought somebody had, like, a jackhammer, like, I seen this motion, but I didn't see it directly, and what it was he was trying to give Mike CPR in the driveway, because he fell down, like, he just had a heart attack. And so he wasn't having a jackhammer. He was, like, trying to wake him up or do whatever the fuck. And then I just remember Molly's mom scream. And I'll never forget the sound of that, because it was, like, the sound of what it sounds like to hear someone's heart break and also someone's life break. Like, literally, like, it was just really hard to hear that. And she just looked at me and she said, take care of your sister. And I took Molly to the back room, and I got a bunch of snacks from the kitchen, and I put on the movie Coco, because me and Molly just, like, we, like, understand each other through Disney movies. Yeah. Like, that's how we kind of communicate, have always just, like, bonded on that. So I just put on Coco, like, I guess trying to get her in that world, because when Molly watches a movie, she goes into that world.
Yeah.
And so I was just trying to get her in that world of being it, what the conversation was going to be.
Oh, like preparing her without
to talk about
being heavy about it, or, mm-hmm.
or like preparing or her to talk about death, but then also being able to explain it, like the follow-up of like remembering Coco. Yeah. And so I guess I just did that instinctually. So so I guess I just put that on, and then I was crying, like uncontrollably sobbing, and so she just started hugging me, and I was like, I can't, like, what is the right thing to do right now? Is the right thing, because I remember so many things about, like, the day my dad died, and, like, how I wished it were different if somebody would have told me that he was sick. And so, like, well, maybe I would have been able to say goodbye, and I was thinking about all those things, like, how would I feel if I was Molly right now, later on? Like, am I going to be mad at me? Like, is Molly going to be mad at me? And then, but, like, I needed to also honor her mom's wishes, which were take care of her and put her, take her in the back, and then I'll come get you when I'm ready.
Yeah.
And, like, I guess she just didn't, because there was no way I think that Molly's mom could have handled, like, Molly's reaction on top of hers. Like, it was too hard to bear.
She was already hurt.
Yeah.
She was already hurting.
And so, so it was really difficult too, because, I mean, it was, I had this movie on, and I had to turn it up so many times because her mom's screams were so loud.
Yeah.
And so I had to, you know, and then I'm just crying, and then Molly's like hugging me, which we kind of just like cuddle whenever the other one sees that we are like upset or hurting or whatever. Yeah. So, oh, this sucks. I hate this. In April, I did the Courageous Conversations on Race Latinx Summit at this hotel in Houston. And it was really cool because that was the place where I met my homie, Dr. Cruz. Shout out. Play some bay music right here. Like, and so I got to perform my homie's empowerment after that. But like the Courageous Conversations, as most of you already know, I feel like I tell these stories so often to different people, but I guess I've never said it on the podcast, so.
Ta-da. Forever to be documented.
Y'all gonna get every piece of these stories. And, so when I went up there, I was like, I was preparing to do a TED Talk. Girl, not a TED Talk. Like a keynote speech.
Yeah. They feel like TED Talk. It's basically what a TED Talk is.
Yes, it's just a keynote. So, you mean it's a keynote speech? Yes, it's a keynote speech.
Yeah.
So, technically, I've done lots of TED Talks, not just one. So, it was called Navigating Latinx Identity in 2019, but that's not what I think I... Oh, this is, God, this is, like, the best meeting I ever had. Like, this is, like, these are the notes of this phone meeting that I had with Luis, who's the, like, dude over there, like, the main dude that handles the business. And these are, like, what he wanted to, like... talk about.
Yeah.
So he was giving me all these ideas, and I was telling him like what I could talk about. And so I was telling him about how I was born into recovery, and my parents met at rehab as two recovering heroin addicts and ex-convicts fresh out of prison. My father, an ex-gang member from East LA with a love and passion for his culture and a weakness for white girls. My mother, a tall, thick Italian blonde. She was an Italian Catholic with blue eyes and an attitude just the way he liked them. It wasn't long until I came along, a chubby little brown baby girl with her mama's attitude and her daddy's personality, and enough identity issues to turn me into a writer, storyteller, and performer. In this keynote, I will talk honestly about how being raised by a white woman has influenced me, confused me, shaped me, frustrated me, ostracized me, taught me, helped me, blinded me, and ultimately opened my eyes. I will share my mother's honest stories of raising two brown daughters and how that has shaped the person she is today. I will share the raw, honest, ignorant, insightful, eye-opening, and even the sometimes hilarious stories of how we have managed to try navigating the courageous conversations that have unavoidably come with living in a culturally blended family. So, yeah, so that's what my keynote speech was on. And he was like, man, this and that. He had all these questions. So these are all the notes I took. This is all him talking. I'm just me like, okay, yeah. okay. So he wanted me to establish a context for race in my life. Like me, my local, my immediate established parameters for me and my mom. He was like, you do not have to share all truths. I was like, you won't Hold get up. Every piece of this truth, homeboy.
Like, you don't know my brand.
You don't know my brand. I hate you for saying that, but I also love you. Put that in my bio.
You don't know my brand. Brands these, neither do I. It's fine.
That's a good one. This is what Luis said. Common themes he sees in my work. Systems of oppression rob people of their ability to be great. Disability wise, ADHD, depression, identity, all of these things, authenticity. And then, yeah, he said he wanted to know what experiences in my life have influenced Angela to use her life the way she is. What is authenticity? You know, all these things that eventually became the seeds became this podcast, because that was one of the platforms I built this podcast on, was me, my most authentic self. Like, what would happen if I didn't give a fuck what anybody thought about how I actually am, without being like, oh, am I going to offend somebody? Am I going to get kicked out the woke community? Is this person still fucking with me? I don't give a fuck. No. So, like, that was, like, one of the premises that I built this podcast on. And we should probably, you know, get out of that, those random notes. While I was up there around April time, I got to perform that was in May. I performed at Homies Empowerment, and I was doing this recording with this lady who had, let me tell you how she found me. Oh my God, it's about to get messy up in here. She found me. I'm not gonna say her name though, because I'm not gonna like hate on people like that. But so she found my Chingona Fire poem on
Instagram or YouTube?
On Google. She Googled the word chingona because somebody told her that she was a chingona. Oh. And she didn't know what that meant. So she said she thought she knew what it meant. She just wanted to make sure. So when you Google the word chingona, look, watch.
Do it. Everyone, this is an interactive episode. Google chingona.
Babe, Google chingona.
Wow.
What did you find?
That's your picture.
Did you see it, babe?
The first thing.
It's literally my picture. And what does it say? It's chingona, a Spanish slang term meaning badass woman. Although the word chingona is a Spanish term, it is not limited to Latinas. A chingona is any woman who chooses to live life on her own terms, period. She is the scholar and the hoe.
That sounds familiar.
And it's from my poem, Chingona Fire, which is me defining the word chingona. And so, mine is the top result out of 4,920,000 results. But it's funny. It's just funny because I didn't even know that. Somebody, like, hit me up. One of my previous students actually, like, sent me a screenshot of this. Like, Miss Angie, when you Google the word chingona, your name pops up. Your face, your picture pops up.
You're famous.
Like, that was so funny. So it comes from my HuffPost, my one and only Huffington Post articles from when I was a contributor. It's how I define my chingona fire. And that was published in 2017. And I wonder if I can still post on there, because I still have the, like, login or whatever. So,
ooh.
But yeah, maybe so I will awesome. In 2020. Some 2020 goals.
Write some more opinion pieces or identity pieces.
Or maybe I could just say it and then you could type it for me.
Yeah. I'll be the
one of those ladies in the court.
Yeah, the stenographer.
That's their name.
That's her in the court.
So I'll be there. So in April, I did that, and that was cool. And then I got to meet Dr. Cruz, which I'm not going to tell the whole story again because I'm already a long-winded bitch. So you could just go back and listen to the Live from Rockland with Dr. Cruz episode, like, that's
There's
up there
the
somewhere.
Full story there.
And so that tells the story of that. And then I met that lady. So she hit me up. She, like, through my website was like, this is blah, blah, blah. I have been looking at your page and I want to give you business advice, blah, blah, business coach. But she's like, hit me up under the whole, like, I love your work. Like, I read the Chingona Fire thing and this and that. And then, long story short, she came to LA. Like, we were like having phone calls back and forth, and she was like, I want to help you, and I want to, this is not, at first she tried to sell me her services, but I couldn't afford it.
Yeah.
And so she was like, well, what if, you know, what if we work together in a different way? So she like calls me back a couple weeks later, and she's like, you said you wanted to start a podcast. What if we start a podcast? And I was like, hell yeah. Like, yeah. She's like, I want to, I'll pay for the studio time and da da da, and I'll like, I'll figure it out. And I'm like, yeah, like, let's do this. So she comes down to LA, and she like takes me to one of them co-working spaces, and it's all like, I'm all like, this is so fancy. Yeah. I definitely want to be creative and work here and post it on Instagram.
Yeah.
And
either Starbucks or Coffee Bean or whichever.
Yeah.
Oh good.
And so so she's like, so I go to this place with her, we work, and we're doing the podcast, like brainstorming. You already know what I was doing. Yeah. She was sitting there. I was up on the board with all my fucking ideas, right?
Just going here.
Yes.
Here,
I was like, if we can take it here and we'll say this, this, and this, 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 this. And then she would make a, like, one whack-ass opinion. I'll be like,
nope.
Yeah, but maybe probably not like that. So, anyways, back to what I was saying. And so I was just, like, basically leading the whole way with the creative side. And so she was, you know, I guess loving that. And she took it and packaged it up and made a little, I even gave it the title that it had, and it's a line from one of my poems. So if y'all could put that puzzle together, go ahead and get the tea.
Interactive episode. Yes. Going scavenger hunt now.
What and look line? For a line in my poem that you have heard on somebody's name of their podcast on Apple Music right now. So she just, I don't know, it didn't work out, because she tried to offer me 20% of the podcast. And then she wanted me to do all of the social media and all of the podcast outline writing and the podcast descriptions and uploading it myself. And I was like, yeah, one of those things is worth 20%.
Yeah.
Not all of them. Like, and not giving you all the ideas for what we talk, like, and not just my fucking personality and the following that I have built over so many years of, like, doing poetry and, like, being in creative spaces. And you literally came from a corporate job and want to come into a creative space and think that you are going to give me 20% of what you're coming into asking me for?
Yeah.
Like, you got to be fucking wild, lady. Like, that's nowhere near fair. And it was just not a good deal. And so I was really proud about myself, how I handled it, because I didn't say any of that. Anything I just said, I didn't say any of that. I just was, like, as professional as I could be. I hit up someone from this creative community who's really, like, someone I look up to, Patty Rodriguez. And I was like, this is my situation. How should I handle this? Because I don't want to burn a bridge, and I don't want to, but also, like, wow.
You don't want to.
She tried me.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not that person.
Yeah.
I'm not the one. And I was also, like, expressing to her, to this person that offered me this opportunity, I was expressing to her that I wasn't in a good place.
Bless you.
I think the sneezing is a good sign. Like, yes, get it out, bitch.
You've overcome this.
And I was expressing to her, like, continuously that I wasn't in a good place, and
bless you.
Jesus, thank you. And she, she didn't see that as me asking for, like, space or time off, you know?
Yeah.
She just kept coming harder with more work schedule things and flights up there, I had gone up there to record 4 episodes already when she offered me 20%.
So you were, like, already in it.
I thought I was a 50% partner. Yeah. That's what I thought this was I got the creative shit, and you got the paying for the studio. Like, honey, we're recording on an iPhone right now, bro. We're recording on a fucking iPhone.
And I'll make it sound decent.
Yes.
That's what,
like,
we
you don't
do
need
it
to be in a studio where Tupac recorded. Like, yes, that was, like, interesting for a minute, but girl, bye.
That's historic, but
yeah, but it's not necessary. Like, that's, like, just because you're putting to that, we could have, if she would have gave me that money and I could have, like, got some groceries off of it, I would have been happy giving her the things she was asking me to do.
Yeah.
You know, like, all of those jobs, like, which come with running a podcast, but not for 20%.
No. That's not something you could sustain off of.
No. And it was 20% of future.
So not even, like, the work you've done.
Now,
like,
no. It was 20% of the investment in the company.
Oh.
Like,
that doesn't sound like it's guaranteed
it's,
a lot of the time.
Girl,
or
no,
a lot,
it's not
even.
So basically she wanted me to work for free. So I figured it out, and I asked what I should do, and I got some advice, and I handled it the best way I could. I was honest that I was honest as I was comfortable being, but I was also, like, firm, and I told her I no longer would like to do this, and these are the reasons why.
Yeah.
And no, like, emotion of, like, and you made me feel like this isn't that. No, I don't need to say all that.
Keep it as business.
Yeah. So but just for the record, this is what you wanted me to do, and this is what you were willing to do, and this is what I've given. And so, just so you don't think that I don't know. And a lot of our conversations, like, on the first podcast were about equity in jobs, like people who are working like contract jobs, and how they weren't getting very much equity in the jobs they were working at, like Facebook and like these tech companies. And I was like, you're low-key doing this to me on a smaller scale.
Yeah,
like, so yeah, but it just didn't feel good, and so I decided that that was not a good place for me to be. And so, but I did still want to do a podcast. That was the idea I had said to her, like, I really want to do a podcast. And so, that's kind of, like, what led me to this. And
it's like, if they're not going to help me do it, I'll do it myself.
Yeah, even though I was, like, in a bad place, so I was, like, doing it really slow. Like, from the time I bought the, like, from the time I purchased the microphone to the time I started recording, I can actually, like, look it up on my email. Pile mic. It shipped in July, and I didn't start using it until September. Wow. So
you were also still going through other things other than just wanting to do the podcast.
Yeah, but that was that me investing in myself in the long term.
Yeah,
like I was like, I'm gonna, like, the same way I bought this, I bought this laptop, and I didn't use it for months because I was still, like, going through the detox, and I was, like, couldn't even come out of a coma, barely.
Yeah.
Like, I was just, like, wanted to sleep all the time.
Like, your body needed to recover before you could go out and do things.
Yeah, and now I'm, like, on this shit all the time because I'm either on Canva or I'm on, like, just trying to do anything that I can to, like, in the small amount of energy that I have to try to figure out this business thing.
Yeah.
Like, trying to build this future thing. Like, this is, I've started to understand that this is how you build an empire, not, like, boulder by boulder, but, like, you know, brick by brick and sometimes pebble by pebble.
Yeah.
You know, like, you literally have to just, doesn't matter how slow you go, you just can't stop.
Yeah.
And that's, like, what this whole thing has really taught me. So, yeah, in July, I started seeing my healer and my therapist. And that was obviously life-changing. And if you've been listening to the podcast, you know, because I won't shut the fuck up about him.
No one can stop you either.
No one.
It's your podcast.
You gotta add some bass to that.
Like. Yes.
But, yeah, so, I mean, I won't shut up about it because I won't shut up about things that worked for me. And I'm a very enthusiastic fucking person. So if I have a product or something that, like, I'm excited about, so there it is, brands. That's why I'll make a great brand ambassador. So go ahead and advertise on the podcast. But yeah, like, when I really like something, I fucking like it.
Yeah.
So I get really excited about it. So I've been, like, saying Jennifer Escalera's name for however long.
She even has her own episode.
Yeah, she has her own episode. Revert back to that in the season one. And, you know, that's been something that's been really healing for me. And so I've been talking about my experience on the podcast because this is a healing podcast. So, like, that's when people ask me now, you heard it here first, folks. I realized that this is a healing podcast. And then in August, I had my Power of One interview, which is also an episode. Oh, my God, this is all making sense.
Yeah.
And
recap.
So it's all an episode, which is my first ever TV interview. And I felt like, I don't know. I just felt like that where I was supposed to be because the reason why this is all making sense is because I had to go through that Power of One episode of having someone ask me questions that were, like, genuinely good intentioned, and he was interested in what I had to say.
Yeah.
Like, and I could feel that energetically, and it was like, oh my God, you're not annoyed.
Well, like, you
want to
know more?
Yeah, you want to know more. You don't want me to shut up. Like, that was a very empowering feeling. And
did you have some of those, like, have I been talking too much moments?
No.
Okay, that's good.
No, I didn't. Like, so I felt like the way I answered the questions, like, that was all in real time. Like, one take. That was it. We just
no edits, through. No cuts.
No edits and no cuts.
That's cool. Because it's also on YouTube, too.
Yeah, it's also on YouTube, so you can watch that. And my outfit is extra, as usual. And my ponytail is really fucked up because I didn't get my line right. And then they put the camera on that side, and I was like, wow. And the guy, I had, like, edge gel because I had put my baby hairs. And the guy's like, excuse me, your forehead is shining? I was like,
no.
I was like, you know what? Don't just, I don't need that kind of negativity. So, yeah, and then I met George Fajardo. God. So, he's the kind of, like, just picture this guy. He's, like, a guy, a brown. He has, like, a dark tan. And then he has, like, silver hair. He's, like, an old TV guy, right? So, he's just, like, he has an Emmy on his desk. Like, he's, like, Angela, listen to me. Right, babe? Mm-hmm.
Okay. He's the ultimate
character. Producer. Like, what did he tell you? Do you remember him?
Yeah, I do remember him. I forgot what he said.
He reminds me of like A, like kind of like what's his name from fucking Happy Days, Fonz.
Oh, yeah, the Fonz.
Yeah, A. I love him. Like, I just love his little vibe. But he's just like, he's always like, say hello to your mom for me. Like, he's just a. And then we had the podcast reveal.
Oh, the ribbon
then,
cutting.
Yeah, and then he let me cut the ribbon.
Oh.
Yeah, like he so cool. He pulled me because I had just finished one of my productions, and then I was just there because I've been working on not leaving places early, like. Not running out of places because I have my anxiety will give me that, like it will give me a tendency to do that, and I used to run out of shows because like I literally couldn't take it anymore, like, like there was it was too much stimulation and I start to get all overwhelmed, and I noticed to this day I still do that, and so I've been really working on that now that I stopped taking the meds, like now that I'm just like calmed down a little bit more and just intentional about what I do. I've been wanting to work on forcing myself to stay a little bit longer because just like I'm going through this even though I don't want to.
Yeah.
Like doing things that are scary to me. Like and being like, oh, you did it. You can do it a little bit longer next time.
Yeah.
And so like I stayed a half an hour. It was the time that I finished my production was like 6 and the ribbon cutting was at 6:30.
So you're like, okay.
So I was like, I have to just be in this space. Talk to people. Maybe you'll like them, you fucking introverted bitch.
It's like what's so scary about it?
Yeah.
Let me go find out.
Yeah.
Kind of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so I made the effort, and also too because I really fully intend for that to be my office for 2020. Okay. And so I needed to be there to reveal my office, and I even told him, like, I made a joke. I was like, "You guys are so cute to go through all this trouble just to show my office to me." Like, I already been in there. He's laughing, and he was like, "It is your office, sweetie." He's like, aww. I don't know. It just seems like he really believes in me, and I don't know if he makes everybody feel like that.
You're but, like, am I special or I don't care?
Yeah, and he's like, I don't know. He's just I feel very safe there, and I feel like that's what I made an effort to actually learn people's names and stay a little bit longer and talk to people and be in community with people, because I'm thinking, like, you know, a lot of people have left my life in the last 2 years, and like, what if I have to, like, I not what if, but I can build my own community in a place that you know, I feel I can actually grow and like that I'm not intimidated by anyone, or nobody makes me feel bad, or nobody, you know, like I don't feel like I don't belong there or that I have to be a certain way or do anything special to be there. Like, I get to be there just because I'm creative, and so is everyone else.
Yeah.
And so, it's just a place where I really feel like everyone's an equal, and I've been really enjoying the production classes that I started those a few months ago. So I guess we're in, like, August, September. Yeah, I think I started in maybe September. And then, October happened.
So in October, I got the opportunity to go to Colorado for my first ever tour. And, you know, I've been to different states and different places to perform at universities for, like, you know, like, one show at a time. But this was my first opportunity to go somewhere for an entire week. And I had to rent a car, and I had to drive myself to all of the schools. And, you know, I did, like, 2, sometimes 3 schools a day, which is, like, for me, very draining because, you know, people think that, you know, when you're at work, it's like what makes you tired is the amount of hours that you work. But for me, it's not that because I could do an hour show and emotionally and spiritually work harder than somebody who sat in an office for 8 hours. Because for me, it's like I put so much energy into my performance because it's literally me like going through things I've been through and telling the truth about myself, like being my complete, most raw, authentic self, and just kind of like emotionally undressing in front of these kids every time. And the point of that is to get to the core of the fact that, you know, we are all more similar than we are different, no matter what we look like on the outside. So who brought me out there was the High Plains Library District in Greeley, Colorado, which shout out, like everyone was so nice to me, and I just had such an amazing time. I was tired. Like, I had all these plans to go out and go hiking and, like, do all this exploring. But after my work day of, you know, doing a couple shows, I would be so exhausted that I would have to go back to the hotel and sleep. But, I mean, I'm still in this time, well, even now, I'm still in my detox, and so my energy levels are just really, like, kind of fucked up because I'm going through a day where normally I would have had Adderall to help me get through it and just kind of speed me through it, but I don't have that anymore. So I thoroughly need breaks and water and snacks, and, like, I was never a person who was taking breaks like that or making sure that I always had my water bottle with me or making sure that I had snacks with me. Okay, I'm sidetracking. So Colorado was really dope for me because it was the first time that I ever got the opportunity to do, like I said, a more than a one performance show. And so I went to all these different high schools and I got to meet so many different kinds of kids that I'm not used to, you know, teaching, because it's obviously it's Colorado, so they're primarily white schools. But it was just, I had to rely on the fact that what I said, which was we're more alike than different, that needed to stand the test of actually going over there and being like, oh, well, this is a little uncomfortable because all these kids are white and I'm used to being around black and brown kids and maybe they're not going to understand my language or maybe they're not going to, like, none of that could matter. And so I needed to just do what I said I could do, which was get to the core of them, and cut with my poetry. And, you know, Dr. Cruz said something on that podcast. He said, your poetry cuts and your poetry heals people. And in this next reaction video that, because the High Plains District sent over this reaction video where some of the students reacted to my, performance. And so we're going to play that right now. But in their responses were just so touching to me because I didn't know, I was hoping that this was the reaction I was going to get, but to actually hear them say it, they really got it. And that was really powerful for me. Here's an example of some of the reactions the students gave to my performance.
It made me want to be more inclusive, which is good because that was, like, the point of the speech. So I think it was really fun to listen to too.
It was very inspirational about, even though someone may look different or act different than so-and-so, someone called normal, that everybody's human at the end of the day.
It showed me a different perspective than what I assumed it would be like.
The way she worded it just sticks in your brain.
That's how we get all connected, is by telling the truth. You know, and what her dad said, you know, people have onions and you have to cut straight to the core. That's the way right there, man. That's the way you bring people together, is that you say, hey, you're not perfect, neither am I. You know what I mean? We're here together.
I would say my favorite place that I performed at was an alternative school that was actually like a juvenile detention center, because for me, that's where my, like, expertise lies. Like, that's where I became the teacher that I am today, is like in those halls or in those alternative schools, like in places like that. And so, you know, while I was out there, I did like a video blog, and here's a excerpt from that.
I'm looking at the pictures from performing at Greeley Central today, this high school in Greeley, Colorado, and it was so cool because I have been trying this thing where I just let myself fly. Like, I don't write a script or practice at nothing. I just let my words just come from the heart, and it's been rough. Like, sometimes it feels like it works and sometimes it doesn't. And so today, my last performance at Greeley in the auditorium, this assembly I did was just like, I don't know if it was the way it was set up, but there was like a lot of students in there, like 100, over 100, and I got to speak to them, but it felt like it was also really personal. So that was really dope for me because I just feel like I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing, you know? And that is really dope. So I just wanted to make a little video blog about that because I'm just too tired to write anything down. And I don't want to forget how I felt. But this feeling is so amazing. Like, it's the best feeling when these kids come up to you after and just, like, tell you how your story impacted them and how they can relate to you. And, you know, it's just, it makes me feel like I'm living in my purpose and I'm finally doing what I've been put on the earth to do, you know?
And then it was Halloween, and I don't remember what else.
Now it was November, it was Thanksgiving, and now we're in December, and tomorrow is Christmas.
And, yeah.
And then the day after that is 2020, so... Yeah, we're done.
That's him. That's, doesn't he look exactly like I said? Everybody Google George Falardo. George Falardeau.
He looks like a very energetic person.
Hi.
Yeah.
Why? This is Huggy Boy. No, I don't know.
Like if you haven't
like
had
a game show host.
Yeah, like he looks, he's so TV. And
yeah,
that's like.
Definitely. I mean, what did he do to you the first time?
Oh, God. The first time he met me, girl, tell me why we were in the green room at Pasadena Media. He took out the director thumbs.
Oh.
He did this to me. My mom joked about had a heart attack. She was like, he's going to make you famous. My mom was so happy.
You're like, Mom, what if he does this to everyone?
I know, but it was so funny. Like, he really, and then I sent a video to my sister. My mom was like, you have to show your sister with your fingers what he did. So I, like, sent her a video. It was so funny. And he gave me the opportunity to host the Latino Heritage Parade. So that was cool.
You got to interview people, like, for the parade.
Hola, Angie. Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm so excited to be here today at the 21st Annual Latino Heritage Parade in Jamaica. I am from Pasadena, and so it's an honor for me to be covering this parade. Thank you.
Y aquí tenemos, siguiendo con...
George Falardo, Pasadena Media.
So aquí hay que darle gracias a la persona que está junto con all of Pasadena Media. And Angie is going to interview him.
Hi, George. I'm great. Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. All because of you. So today I would like to ask you, what do you think the most beautiful thing about the Latino community is here in Pasadena?
So before I answer that question, I want to make sure that I thank you and all of the team from Pasadena Media, especially you. This was her premiere today, and you did an amazing job. We watched you from the car and all the interviews. You were amazing. The team was amazing, and I'm so proud of all of you today. And this is such an important day for the Latino community, for all of us. To be, as Victor said and others said, to be part of this community, but express ourselves in the community and have an identity in this community. And I'm so proud that we could be part of that today.
Thank you, George. All
right. ¿Quieres decir algo, Angie, antes de que nos despedimos?
Yes.
How about your favorite thing?
My favorite thing is, I have an interesting Latino experience because I'm half Latina. I'm half Mexican and half Italian. Nice. And so everyone's experience in Latinidad is different, and I feel that it's important to just say that Latinos comes in all shapes and sizes. Every brown is beautiful, and we come in all shades. And so I love the diversity. I love the food, music, and all of the other things that make us beautiful. So thank you so much for having us, and this has been amazing. Yeah. Thank you, ladies.
It's been amazing, isn't it?
Big moment. In 2019.
Yes, big moments. And oh, okay, another big moment was in July when I went to the LBC concert. I fainted in the parking lot.
You seem fine now.
Yeah.
So, and you're laughing about it now, so I figured.
Yeah, no, it was just because I was going through a detox and I was just like, I don't know. That shit was weird. But Nadia was doing my baby hairs. It was me, Nadia, and Tiff, and she was doing my baby hairs right outside the car. And I just...
Oh, no.
And I just, like, I buckled. I fell into a noodle body.
Oh, God.
And I just noodled to the floor. And then Tiffany goes, is she playing?
You're like, I wish.
And then luckily I had brought up, because I'm a fucking smart bitch. Let me tell you what I did.
All right.
I thought ahead in my life, and I was like, this is going to be hard as fuck. But it's also going to be fun as fuck, because I really love everybody on this. Nipsey Hussle was supposed to be, that's the reason why I bought the tickets.
Yeah. Oh.
And,
So it was like a big event to have to go.
Oh, I didn't buy the tickets. I'm fucking lying. Shout the fuck out to Dentra because I wrote this poem about hip hop and I'm fucking lying. I'd be telling lies. Like, I was like, wait a minute. Did I buy the ticket? No, I didn't. It was Dentra.
Different version of it.
So she hit me up and she's like, oh my God, I fucking love this poem. Like, I don't even know how she found it. And it was about hip hop. And then she was like, are you going to LBC concert? I was like, nah, I can't right now. And she was like, yes, you are. I got you. And then she bought me a ticket. Shout the fuck out. And I didn't even get to say hi, give her a hug.
Or thank her in person.
Yeah. But.
Well, you had your own thing going on, too.
Yeah. That day. I was fainting. Oh, so you know what I did with that? I went and got myself a disability wristband. Oh. And I sat myself on the disabled place. So I was like, sir, I fainted. I am not doing well.
But I deserve to be here.
Yes. Because I want 10 participation points for this on my permanent record. So what is the question? Do you mind sharing about when you were diagnosed with ADHD and if getting diagnosed made certain things make sense after? Ooh! Fairly Literally. That comes from Instagram. Fairly Literally. That's what it says?
You?
I don't know. Literary.
Barely literary. Yeah.
So, I was diagnosed with ADHD back in 2000. Ooh, about to lie. About to either 2006 or 2008, because 2006 was, yeah, actually, okay, you know what? Yes, it was 2006, because I was going to PCC at the time, and I was having struggling so bad with the intermediate math class. So I was at, there's like math 401, like, so you test into your math, right? For everybody that goes to community college, you have to like placement test. I placed into the, not, so there's math 401, and then there's math 401A, and then there's math, no, there's whatever. I was in the lowest one. I can't get my example out, but I was in the fucking lowest one. In math 401A, so that's like before even 401. So the teacher noticed that I was struggling, not just like I was, this was more struggle than I should be having. Like, he was seeing that, like, this is stressing her out, and she's like, she's really trying. So, you know how people, like, get wrong answers just because they're, like, not paying attention?
Yeah.
This is me paying attention and still simple math making mistakes.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And so he was like, I think you need to go to the Office for Students with Disabilities. I was like, I think you need to go to the Office for Students with Disabilities. I was like, I ain't going nowhere. I'm fine. This is hard. He's like, yeah. That's the thing. It's not. Like, real shit, it's not. And so you, like, that was the first time I think maybe anybody had ever been real honest with me.
And said, you might have a problem.
Yeah. Like, this might be something beyond just you not trying hard enough. So I went, I made an appointment, and I started taking these tests. And then, the funny thing was that here's the cheat code to telling people you have ADHD. So there's these tests, you have to answer a series of number of questions and, like, do puzzles and shit. So you get, I didn't know this. If I would've known this, I would've strategized better. You get 4 hours to take the test. Ooh. Tell me why I finished that shit in 15 minutes. Because I did not want to answer him. So I was literally, like, eh. So then the girl will say, you know how I know you have ADHD? Because you took a test in 15 minutes that most people take 4 hours to take. And I go, I'm really smart. She goes, no, you really didn't try. You have no patience, like, to even sit there and try to read it. And, like, I don't know if it's because you can't read or it's because you don't enjoy it or whatever it is. And I'm like, well, it's because it's boring. I don't, if I, you give me a,
something
at that time, if you give me a Harry Potter book, I'll read it. But I'm not going to read no test to tell me whether or not I got something I don't want to have.
Right.
So I thought if I could fail the test.
I wonder if that's another, like, subconscious ADHD avoidance, or a way of avoidance that your ADHD does for you, maybe?
What you mean?
So, you finishing really quick because something wasn't interesting, it's like, I don't want to put effort into something that I can't probably handle.
Or like, I can't, you got it.
So you're like, yeah, this test, I got it, and I'm done. And then they're like, actually, this is a sign. This is an indicator of something else.
Yeah. Oh, so when I was diagnosed, and if getting diagnosed made certain things. So, yes, things really did make more sense after getting diagnosed with ADHD, because I felt that I was stupid because things that were easy for other people were hard for me. And so once reading about ADHD and seeing that, like, recognizing that there were good things to it too, that it was kind of like my superpower, because all the things that it was listing, like, on the computer when you're reading, like, you might have ADHD if, like, it's all, you're highly creative, you're a leader, you're loud, and you're outspoken, all of those things to me, I was like, yeah, that's me. Like, those are all the things I liked about myself.
Yeah.
But those were also the things that characterized me as different, and that was always, like, hard to reconcile with, because I think for a long time I just wanted to be the same as everyone, because that was easier.
Yeah.
And, you know, So it made me know for sure that I wasn't stupid, because I always knew I was really smart, but I was like, how come I'm really smart and sometimes, and other times I lock my keys in the car 9 times in 1 month. Like, how come I, and then I could tell you, I could like break down the theory of relativity and just like make it understandable, but I can't remember to do certain shit, or I can't send an email without having a panic attack. Wow. So it's like, there's like highs and lows. So both of those things, it helped me, I guess it helped me, recognize that about myself. So, let's just get this over with. So someone else asked a question about the grind culture. And they wanted to know what I think about it. And I think that there's a... I think deciding to commit to creating and becoming an entrepreneur kind of helped me understand what the grind culture was. Because I always thought grind meant like... I guess making money, like hustling in some sort of way, but I wasn't ever looking at it like the grind, like the 9-to-5 grind. Like, that's not what I was thinking about, but I was doing that. So I always thought the grind culture meant like making money illegally. Like, I was still on your grind, like, but I didn't really ever like approach it to like, you know, being working a city job or, you know, whatever I was doing at the time, just kind of like ignoring what I really wanted to do. So I think my comment on the grind culture is that I kind of let that go. And instead of the grind culture, like, I'm on, like the spiritual grind. Like, I'm just trying to get better. Like, I'm just trying to heal whatever the pain and, like, stuff that I've gone through. So I think that's how what I think of it. It's just, like, if what I think grind culture is, which is just, like, doing what you have to do now so you could do what you want to do later, like, you know, like waking up early even though you hate waking up early, because the world operates from 9-to-5, so you got to be in the world because that's an expected norm of a person your age and all of that. I think that, I don't know, I think I gave that up, like, and I have felt so much better for it, but I'm also scared as fuck because I'm struggling to pay rent. So
like, okay, I need something.
Yeah, I definitely need something, which is why now I'm only allowing myself to... He's been helping me look for jobs, and he's been looking at, like... He sent me, like, this full-time city job, and I just, like, don't want to do that. Because I don't want to go back to that kind of restrictive work where I was so unhappy and, like, sitting in a cubicle and complaining about 5% raise. Like, when you're an entrepreneur, you could give yourself a raise whatever you want, or you don't take a salary at all.
Yeah.
And so, but it's like, there's no one dictating your well-being, like, only you are. How hard are you gonna work to sell shirts this week? You know, like, it's not the same thing as having a retirement plan, but I have an investment account now. So,
and that can grow. That'll definitely become something
if I'm consistent.
Yeah.
And I get to set the terms of that because I get to choose what stocks I buy and all this stuff. And I wasn't able to do that with my city job. But the sad part is I just wasn't alerted to that, the importance of that. Because I just was like, it's more like the information's there. If you go look for it, no one tells you how important this is for your life. That's kind of like an essential belief across all adulthood though.
Yeah.
Like, nobody tells you, like they'll say you should pay attention to your credit, but it's not like,
why?
If you don't pay attention to your credit, you won't be able to move out your mom's house.
Yeah.
Like, why don't they tell you like that?
They don't emphasize how important it really is or specify how much you need it.
And so think about
until
this.
It's too late.
Think about how much we just agree with that. Like, we feel like it's not emphasized in that way where it's like, if you don't do this, then this will happen. Like, I think that's the way I learned better.
Yeah.
It's like, not, you should take care of your credit. I'm like, yeah, I should do a lot of things. What the fuck?
It's like, you learn better by experience.
I should go exercise right now. Yeah. Like, I should do a lot of things that I'm not doing. So, like, what's in it for me? Or, like, what's not? And so if it's like, you know, you should, you know, pay attention to your credit because you might not... leave your mom's house, then it's like, oh, well, I think I'm going to just perk up my ears a little bit more and pay attention to that one.
What do you mean about credit? How do I...
Yeah.
Tell me how.
Tell me a little more. Is there a YouTube video I can watch? So, yeah, I think that's... I don't know how we got here, but...
I think that's one side effect of grind culture is that we're having to self-educate. And I think we can self-educate on a lot more financial stability alternatives, you know, like investment. What did you call it? An investment account?
Yeah. And I have stock in Nike. I bought 2 stocks in Disney after Disney Plus came out. Nice. Or before it came out. And then I have net stock in Netflix. And then Facebook, I think. And yeah, I don't really know much about this whole thing yet. But like, maybe I have, maybe people are like, we're going to stop listening to the podcast. Because no. They're like, oh my God, Facebook is raping children or something, like, I don't know, something that I would not want to be fucking associated with. And then, so now I'm gonna have to rethink my whole decisions.
Well, now we just means we got to do some research, and then we can do an episode on
what I learned.
Yeah So this is just the start. But on grind culture, it takes a toll on you, and that's kind of what happened for you, like, or that was like the beginning of the year anyway.
Yeah,
kind of that whole.
Do you have any thoughts on that, babe? On grind culture?
I've never heard of that, so.
Well, you didn't just hear what I just said?
I wasn't paying attention.
Well, it's like, it's basically like going to work every day, like kind of what you do. You're in grind culture right now. Like you go to work and you're like looking forward to the overtime, and you're like, this is like, you just gotta grind it out.
Yeah.
What do you talk to say about that?
I gotta pay bills, so yeah, I got to. This is a way to live. Mm-hmm. You know, I got no choice. What else are you gonna do?
Do you think it's more of a pressure because you have a kid?
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, you're taking care of someone who's looking at you to be taken care of. So you have to. Mm-hmm. Just wake up every morning, go to work.
Do you ever at work like how I used to be, like, man, fuck, I hate this fucking place. Like, just like walking around pissed. Like, let somebody look at me.
Yeah, you know, yeah, there's times where you don't want to be at work, but then, you know, I look at how many people are trying to get into that field that I'm in, and it's like, you go to these interviews and you go sign up and you apply for these jobs. And you go take a test, and it's like 1,000 people for like one position. So at the same time, I'm like, man, I definitely don't want to be back in that line, you know. Mm-hmm. So I'll stick it out. It might not be where I want to be, but you know, definitely better than where I was.
See, and that's such a way people, so many people look at it. Thank you for your commentary, Mr. Moore. Thank you for being on the Millennial Mija podcast. Peace out. I think that's like the way I thought about it for so long. Because growing up, we looked at it like the city, like, dying over the city. Yeah. Like, you probably got benefits, everything. Yeah, like, we look at it like, yeah, it's like, I mean, compared to what anybody else is doing, like, I remember I was working at Subway, like,
and you're like, I wish.
And I was like, damn, I wish I could work at the city. Yeah. I wish I didn't have to touch no damn food all day. I hate this shit.
I want a cushy office job.
Yeah, and then you get the office job and you're like, I want to kill myself.
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Okay. Tips for staying aligned when you have ADHD? I have none. Clearly.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress. How do we heal without ignoring or clinging to the hurt? Answer. You have to feel it. You have to let yourself feel it. Otherwise, you're not really. Just because you stop talking about something doesn't mean you're healed. Yeah. Like, dead, that's it. Period. Close quote.
I think a lot of people don't want to confront what's been hurting them. I think a lot of people think they're fine when they move on from something, but they still don't confront the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when it just grows and you're moved on, but not really.
Yep. And that's the answer. So you confront it, you let yourself feel it, like you like actually do whatever you need to do to process it. Like
you said, you were working a lot of stuff, like you working on your anxiety about being in places for too long.
Yeah. And I also been working on on going places by myself. I started that back in June. The first place I went by myself was to this like beauty pop up or whatever, like to listen to some like speakers. And Karina, shout out Karina Luna, who reached out to me. She slid in my DMs talking about, you seem cool, can we be friends?
Aww.
And like I went over to her studio. She was just like really dope to me and just like kind of came in at a right time when I was like really feeling really lonely. So like I appreciate that. But I went there because I wanted to hear her speak, and she and she was very inspirational, dude. She's an actress. She's like was on the Cholos Try YouTube series, and yeah. And she's just like, she's a Latina in media, and she's just, you know, doing the damn thing. She turned her, she has a studio, and she turned her apartment into a fucking studio. That's how dedicated to her hustle she is. Like,
oh, wow. She lives in it.
Yep. Literally wow. lives in it. And just like, and it's so professional. You wouldn't even know. Like, it's just, man, she just wow. like, she really just, you could tell that she's motivated, and it's very motivating.
Yeah.
And so I started to, I went there because I was like, it would be cool to hear her and all these other people speak, like these women in business, Latinas in business. So I went to go and get inspired, and I was. And then another place that I went this summer or whatever this year has been the Vogue Summit. And I went there. That was a different experience, but I accomplished my task of, okay, I'm going to go somewhere alone.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where I go, but let it be somewhere that's going to inspire me. Another place I went was to the Louis Vuitton exhibit. Mm-hmm. On Rodeo Drive, and that was hella like inspiring because it was visually like I'm a visual person, and I like art really speaks to me. And all of the collaborations that I'm not gonna lie and say all of them, but most of the collaborations that Louis Vuitton has done, like with artist collaborations, I mean, those were curated by Marc Jacobs, and that was yeah. one of like my style icons. I never really like identified with his style of making clothes or whatever, but like because it was never like, but when he would do some really bright chunky stuff, like I loved yeah. it. But I also just really looked up to him for some reason. And so going there, like he chose a lot of those collaborations, so it makes sense that I would like them because they were a lot of them were yeah. his taste. And so I thought that that would be somewhere that would interest me to go, and I took myself on a date. And mm-hmm. The only thing that was a little difficult was like the selfie thing. Like, I was, like, needing to ask people, and that was, like, oh, I hate talking to people. Yeah, like,
I'm here alone. Why can't I stay alone?
Kind yeah, of deal. Yeah, like, I thought this was gonna mean that
I don't have to interact with anyone. I can be in myself the whole time. Excuse me, can you, yeah. can you take my picture?
Really yeah, quick? And thank then you have to, like, make some stupid-ass, like, conversation.
Oh, thank you. Do you want me to take your picture? I can do it. We can switch. No, you're good. Okay, bye.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, I have, you know, been making it an effort to do that. Like, I went to Ana Alvarado. Shout out. Happy birthday, Ana. I went to her birthday party alone because Chris couldn't make it. But it mattered to me if I was there or not.
Yeah.
And so I was like, it was hard for me to get out of bed that day. Like, but I
wanted to be there.
Yeah, I wanted to be there and celebrate somebody who had, you know, really reached out to me in a moment where I felt really alone and like gave me a little bit of guidance and sat there with me and said, this is how you do a sticker. And when that was the real world that like help I needed at that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like I didn't need like somebody to take me out for drinks. I needed no. someone to tell me how to make a sticker.
Yeah.
Cuz that was where my head was at. And so she kind of showed up and just is kind of like a sister in community and just, yeah, introduced me to a lot of people. Like, I met some dope-ass women from, like, the surrounding neighborhoods, just who she has surrounded herself with. And that's why she's a winner, because she surrounds herself with dope people. And it was cool getting to talk to people. And, you know, the girl from Abuela's Kitchen?
Yeah.
Well, she was sitting across from me. She was so cute. And then there was her homegirl, a stranger from Echo Park, who's like her whole was like the consultant. Like her life was for Mi Vida Loca, that movie.
Yeah.
And so yeah, she has like the Mi Vida Loca gear, and she was telling me all about that. And it was just so cool because I could relate to her. Like
yeah,
I could just relate to her. And it was I was telling her what that movie meant to me, and she was sharing really like cool experiences about what it was like real insight into how it was for her, you know, and how that movie changed her or didn't, or she didn't realize that they had this like fan community of people like yeah. until 3 years ago
of and, like people who love the movie
yeah
and
yeah.
relate to it and wow
yeah yeah. And so I think that that's really cool that social media has, you know, let people, you know, build communities again in like based on interest, you know, where yeah. I mean, I think that's always where people build communities. Like, if yeah. you like church, you go meet people at church. If you like soccer, you in the league.
But so. It's really hard to meet each other if you're across the country.
Yeah.
But and now, so, mm-hmm. it's a different setup.
Yeah. And what you see, and what I was telling Stranger was that she said that it got a lot of backlash because a lot of people thought that it was a gang movie. And I was like, a gang movie? What? There's nothing about this movie that's a gang movie. I was like, this is a story about friendship that's using a neighborhood as a backdrop.
Yeah.
And it has nothing to do with gangs or nothing. Like, that's the backdrop, but that's not the story. And the story is so powerful, like, about two homegirls, you know, and, like, the ups and downs that they could go through. And, like, and it's very authentically done because those kids were all 16, 15-year-old kids from that exact neighborhood. And she still lives in that neighborhood to this day. It was just cool to talk to her. And she was just telling me it was written by Allison Anders, this white woman who used to ride the bus with her mom. And she was like, I'm really fascinated by your daughter. Like, do you think she would let me ask her questions? And her mom was like, you don't ask her. Like, and so she asked her, and then it kind of made history from there. And then one of their people from their neighborhood actually, wasn't able, or I think passed away or something. And then that director actually adopted her baby. Aww. So it was like they really became a family, and I was like, oh my god, touched my heart. So like cool. And it's just like, it was like, that's dope.
And that's something you learned by from kind of forcing yourself to get out of bed on a day that was hard for you.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. And like everything has been a struggle. Everything has been hard for me, like down to my relationship, like trying to heal at the same time as like somebody else, and like what that looks like, and you know how much grace I need on a daily basis sometimes, you know, sometimes how much grace he needs. Yeah. And so let's answer some other questions.
Okay.
What fuels my joy? IG Kamari Carter. Hey girl, that's my friend. She also was here, part of this journey this year. She came and helped me when my brain wouldn't work. She came to the library over here, and she showed me how to set up my online store. So shout the fuck out to Kamari Carter, because she has been very instrumental in my writing career, because she was like working for World Stage Press, which is my publisher. And she was the person that was, you know, in charge of my royalties and all the whatever else. I don't know what she did, but all of it shit that she did, she did a lot of stuff. And so she literally got, I was like, she's like, what can I help you with? And I was like, I don't know how to do this online store shit. Like, it's not making no sense to me. Like, I just needed help. And she came and was like, it works. Look, it works. Like, you did it. And it was like a 5-minute meeting. I was like, oh my God. And then she was the first person to buy one of my shirts. Aww. So that brings me to talking about my shirts and my merch. Like, my merch just finally happened this year, which is something I've been wanting to do for so long. Like, I can't even explain how long, but I guess I was just paralyzing myself. Like, I was paralyzed with fear of not being able to do it, that it just stopped me from even trying, which is the only way you do it.
Yeah.
You just have to try to do it. And that's what it took me so long to realize and so long to learn. But yeah, I got my Miha Making Move shirts out, and they're available right now on millennialmiha.com.
Still some of the charcoal left.
Yes, still some of the charcoal and some of the white. We're almost sold out of them, but you know, please feel free to get yours. And we just did my first sale ever for Shop Small Saturday, and so this is my first year being a small business again since like I was 18. And yeah, so now I'm back into, but that's not like what I primarily want to do. Like, I want to make the podcast a big deal. Like, that's my intention for 2020, is to make the podcast a big deal. Like, that's like the perfect way to say it too. Yeah. Like, because I don't even know what it might mean. I just want to make the podcast a big deal.
Yeah.
I want to make it a means of income. I want to be able to pay Felicia.
Thank you.
I want to be able to pay Dion.
Yes.
I want to be able to not worry about where my rec money's coming from, so that I can put more effort into and energy into making the podcast better. So like, not just like word vomit like I'm doing now, but like actually like, let's do it this way because whatever.
That's definitely the plan.
And yeah, and so I want it to be like well produced, but you know, to ask people to be like, help me come up with podcast development. That's like, you know, it's hard to ask them to do that without paying them. So it's like kind of like, I'll tell Felicia and she'll just come over and be like, let's smoke a joint and just see what comes out.
We have this topic and this topic. I'm just gonna like make put a bunch of topics on paper mm-hmm. keep a fishbowl of it, and then every time I come over, we just pull a topic out,
yeah,
and then I just watch you go.
Yeah, just like, all somebody has to do is ask me a question, and that's why my whole, like, one-on-one podcast is, like, whack for me, because I'm like, I got answers, I don't have questions. One of the questions was, what fuels your joy? And that was Kamari's question. So what fuels my joy is, like, for example, this Sunday, we have coming up on December 8th, 2019, we have coming up the first ever season of self-writing workshop, which is the continuation of the summer of self workshop that I started this year.
Yeah.
And so as a means for my own healing. So the podcast is in two parts. There's the podcast, and then there's the interactive part, which is the workshop. Yeah. Because what I basically talk about on the podcast is what I basically talk about in the workshop, but there's just an opportunity to do an activity with it. So I'm really excited for the activity that I've come up with, and that Felicia helped me flesh out. But it's going to be 4 note cards, and each of them has a date. So January 1st, April 1st.
July 1st,
and then October 1st.
Yeah.
Because it's like the 4 quarters of the year. And then the 5th card is going to be a birthday card for yourself. And all of these are going to be like cards that you're... And then also what I'm going to have everybody do is set an alarm on their phone to remind them to open the card. Because the idea is that, like, what I have had to do this year is be there for myself. And that's essentially what these... what these, like, cards are showing the people, the students, that they can do is that, like, you can ask yourself for advice, you can be your own kind of reassurance, like, you can be there for yourself. And I never knew that, and as obvious as that might sound to other people, for me, people are learning with me in real time, so that's my opportunity to be like, this is an active way that you can participate in your own life and in your own healing and in your own, like, restoration and your own recovery, because that's what I've been going through. And so I'm excited to see what comes out of that, because, I mean, at my last workshop, I had all of the people who were there write thank you notes to themselves for coming that day. And I remember Priscilla in particular, shout out, who she also sponsored someone's registration to come for this coming Sunday. But she wrote a thank you note to herself, and she said she posted it on Instagram, and she just, like, tagged me and was like, I'm crying right now because I wrote myself the most beautiful words, and I opened them exactly when I needed to read them. Yeah. And, like, it was just that sparked my idea of doing this, you know, card.
For the next year, yeah.
Yeah, for the next year. Like, and also, I like the idea of a birthday card, because I never really... So ever since my dad died in 2011, like, I found my dad, like, on the floor in his room, like, covered in pee on my birthday, 2011, January 20th. And that was, like, fucking scarring for life. So, like, I have a hard... And then 4 days later, I had to take him off life support because I was his, like, person, you know. And so, needless to say, I haven't really celebrated big birthdays after that. Like, it's not really a celebration time for me. But I like the idea of writing myself a birthday card, because I think people around me are, like, a little touchy. They know that that's a hard time for me.
Yeah.
So I think...
They put, like, the kid gloves on and...
Yeah.
Like, how are you?
And yeah.
You're like, please don't.
Yeah, but then I think that also has caused people... Because I will legit say, I don't want to celebrate my birthday. Like, I don't want to. And so people are trying to be respectful, but they're also trying to be like, well, let's do something, but...
Try and distract you.
Yeah.
Trying to make you feel better, but...
And
maybe
so
you're not ready.
Yeah. And so I think that if I allow myself to celebrate, like, that may be what I need to write in my card. Okay. You know, like, allow yourself to celebrate. Because so it's the idea that, like, you know yourself enough to, because for the first time in my life, now that I'm not taking the meds, I'm, like, awake to my life. Because that's the thing. I've always been a person that has a bad memory. But the real thing is not that my memory's bad. It's just that I wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
Because I was trying to numb my life.
Yeah.
Numb myself from my life. So I think that is... like, for me, that would make sense for me to, like, I'm asking everybody to think about their own life. Like, I want to map out, I'm going to give a calendar.
Yeah.
And have people, like, with highlighters, like, highlight certain days that are really important that you can just think of off the top of your head. So, like, what's your usual mind frame around this time?
Yeah.
What will you need to hear, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that, so this is an example of this being the, like, activity participation portion of the podcast, like the workshops, because it's me, like, I'm talking about it right here, but I'm also going to, like, heal myself using that technique, but in real time in the workshop. So I'm hoping that that different people come this time, because it's, you know, it's magic every single time. It's really magic. What was your experience being there?
I went to the second Summer of Self. I missed the first one, but the second one felt like it was one of the first times I was going somewhere by myself too, because I was coming to terms with, like, I just can't hang out with my friends, like, the friends that I want to see. We're all at this point in our life where, oh, I have to work, I have to pick this job up, and, like, plans fall through. So I was starting to feel really lonely, and then I realized I can just go places. I can just go out into the world. And this was the first, like, event I did that, and it was like all the people who were there were like, hi, like, as if they had known me, but they were excited to see me, and it was like, but I've never met you before. So it was a little scary, but it was really, like, welcoming, and it was like, okay, this is where I was supposed to kind of go. And then the things we talked about, was like, well, okay, yeah, I can actually add to this conversation. This makes it me feel like I was even more supposed to
be. What do you remember talking about, or, like, what topic made you feel ready to share, or, like, you could contribute?
We listened to the song Friends by J. Cole, and then we talked about addiction, and I remember talking about, like, my addiction to my phone, pretty much, and then kind of, like, well, why am I always needing my phone with me, needing my phone around me, while I'm always trying to distract from myself from where I'm at? Well, where am I at that I want to be distracted? Oh, work. I'm always at work. I hate my job. So that was, like, kind of a realization of, you think you're where you're supposed to be, or doing what you think you're supposed to be doing, but you might have gotten the message mixed up, or you might have done something, gotten something backwards, so just reevaluate it. And then it was kind of like, I can't work here anymore. And led to the realization, like, I can't really work a job just for the paycheck anymore. Like, I went to school for something, and I need to go and chase that. I've been taking, I worked as a server, and I worked this test center administrator job because they were safe, they were steady, and I told myself I could, oh, I can pick up jobs around, I can build experience because I'll have to work for free, but I'll still have rent money, and, like, that's not how it worked at all. My time was taken up by my job that I was using to pay rent, and I had no energy, no time, no availability to really chase my dream. And I talked about that at the Summer of Self of, you know, I wish I could do this, but I have to do this. And I forgot who it was, but someone says, like, no, you don't have to. You can just quit and get something closer to it.
That was me. I said that.
Yeah, it was probably like, you were like, don't do it. Get out of there. You have to quit.
Oh, I distinctly remember that, because I remember Nadia being like, or, like, maybe not Nadia, but someone that I knew closer to me might be like, oh.
Yeah.
Like, damn, you just said that. You know,
I was like, I want to quit. And you're like, no, you have to. And I was like, okay. And then that's, like, that kind of did plant the seed of, like, just quit. Because I also, you know, just this past week put my letter of resignation.
Yes. Hey.
And I had no job lined up. I just knew I needed to get out and make myself available to what I wanted. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of open myself up. And that started the summer. And I met some really cool people at the workshop too. I met Liz Gomez, and
who's doing a video for me right now. Shout out Liz Gomez, and she just released her new book that she gave me.
Yeah, and I got it at home. It's like, it's right next to your book, Confessions of a Firework.
Oh, so cool.
And
it's a community.
Yeah, and I also met Dora
Fat Chicana Feminist.
Yeah.
Yes, and Doris Tiendita.
Yeah, Doris Tiendita.
She's so supportive, dude.
She is. She's amazing. And I have been following her page, Fat Chicana Feminist, for, like, years, and I had no idea it was her until, like, I followed her store, too, after I met her, and she cross-posts sometimes, like, the same post, or she reposts from one account to the other, and I was like, what? Hey!
Yeah.
And so I had to message her, like, thank her for running the page, so then that was cool, realizing I'd met someone that, like, I already admired and didn't even realize it. And
yeah.
And I met a new friend, Naomi, from She's from Long Beach.
And I remember her.
She just opened a store called Better Footprints.
Okay.
Eco-friendly products. Like, I bought a couple tongue cleaners. She has bamboo toothbrushes, reusable produce bags. I brought some, like, nice soaps and, like, face masks. They're, like, all natural products. So
shout out to sustainability.
Yes. That's the goal with her store. She's already done, like, pop-ups. Shops like for a small business Saturday and things like that too. Yeah. So she's doing really good.
Yay, shout out.
So I met more people there that like I can't remember their names, but
yeah.
But yeah, I definitely met, I remember you even went to dinner with some of the girls after the workshop, and it was like I found a little kind of bubble of
bubble of positivity.
Yeah. So it was just, that was a really good day, and I can't wait for the next one now too.
Yeah. And so now back. And now you're helping me. Yeah. Like you applied to, I like put out a post for somebody who to help me with social media, and then okay, a lot of people, thank you for everyone who responded. And yeah, Felicia kind of definitely stood out for mm-hmm. just a lot of reasons. Because you actually brought Chinguna Fire out to perform at your campus.
Yeah. I worked as a student assistant at Cal State San Bernardino in the Women's Resource Center. And I wanted to put together a Latina-centered event.
Mm-hmm.
And I found Chinguana Fire online by, you know, looking up button poetry. And I saw you perform one of the poems, Boobs versus Brains.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I was like, okay, I want her there. I want her here. And that's like right when Chinguana Fire was established. So mm-hmm. I was like, I hope they want to come. And then it ended up being, that was the first campus that you had performed at. So
yeah,
that was really cool.
It was.
And then we brought you back again for Take Back the Night to perform
and
again.
That one for the Take Back the Night one was the same day we did our TED Talk.
Yeah, I remember like talking about that over email. And I was like, I went to my my coordinator, Janet, at the time. And like, Janet, they have TED Talks. She's like, well, can they come after? And I'm like, I'll ask.
And I remember we were like, fuck it. That was part of the grind culture for me. I was like, shit, this is what I live for. Like, that was the time. Those were the moments that I was living for. Because, but it's so funny how those were such high moments for me. And I was like, this is what I want to do. This is fucking fun. This is, I don't need to take my medicine for this.
Yeah.
Like, and then I was still too scared. Like, I just couldn't do it. I didn't believe that I could do it. And really, like, what I keep, I think, a recurring theme in the podcast have just been the process of actually believing in myself and how I want people to know how long it's actually taking me.
And how many tries.
Yeah.
Because there was a time when you completely believed in yourself and you were up, mm-hmm. and then life happened and kind of brought you down, and now you're going through it and, like, building back up. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's, like, the real roller coaster, like, the trajectory of success, you know? Yeah. Like, and that's really what I want to stress to people is like that it's definitely looks like a fucking pulse or heartbeat, you know, like
an erratic one too.
Yeah. An erratic one at that. So yeah, I mean, that's pretty much, I think, a good recap of 2019.
Yeah. And with the Q&A mixed in too, because those questions are like very important and relatable to what you've gone through.
Yeah.
In your life.
And so 2019, what the fuck? That's another alternate title to the Trauma Marathon.
The Trauma Marathon and...
AKA the year of what the fuck. And so, yeah, I just want to say shout out to all of you who have been listening because, man, like, there have been certain days where I barely wanted to just, like, get out of bed, which is, like, almost every day still. But, like, I'll look at the messages that people will send me about the podcast and... they're just so encouraging and like, don't stop, keep going. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Or like, I binged watched the whole season, or I binge listened, and you know, like, just telling me how much it's meant to you. And that has helped keep me going on days where I didn't want to go nowhere, do nothing. Like, just seeing the listens go up and up and up. And I really don't know if we're getting a lot of listens in comparison to any, because I don't have shit to compare it to. But all I know is that I don't give a fuck. Like,
and you're getting like thousands because people are listening,
and that makes me so happy. That just makes me happy that I could be myself. I basically proved my theory was that if what would happen if I just beat myself.
Let's see. And so far, it's been great.
Yeah, like it's definitely been great. But I want to manifest this year for myself. I want to manifest partnerships of all kinds, and I want to manifest an agent from CAA, and I want to manifest just a different living situation where I'm more comfortable in a place with plants that I don't kill, and I want to manifest just like bigger things for myself, and hope and healing. And I hope that you all will take a little bit of with that with you into your new year. And I love you so much. And and shout the fuck out to Netflix. I also want to manifest some type of creative project with Netflix. Yep. Because I have been had that dream, and I equate my dream of working with Netflix to the same kind of dream that I had to do a TED Talk. And I accomplished that shit. So guess what, Netflix? I'm coming for that ass. You can do it. And so, yes, I just appreciate all of you for being a part of my journey. And I appreciate you, Felicia, for helping me.
Thank you.
And with that, I just want to say,
let's make the next decade a good one.
Let's go into 2020 and be the badass chingonas that we are, and celebrate ourselves, and continue healing every day. And the fucking motto, which is, forgot.
Yeah, that's the motto. I forgot.
No, it's like, don't stop, just keep going. Or what was my shit? I freaking forgot it. Damn, that was my moment, and I just, like, squandered it.
Well, we can re-record. It's fine.
Yeah, it was like, actually, I'm going to close like this.
All right.
I'm going to close with the same thing that I closed with from the very first episode, with my beloved Dion, my beloved producer, which is the Biggie quote, because it's still accurate and it always will be, which is, stay far from timid, only make moves when your heart's in it, and live the phrase, sky's the limit. Motherfucker.
It's the motherfucking Millennial Mija podcast.
See you in 2020, bitches.